History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Ashe. We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Davis Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Ray,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson,
Muhammad.
Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
The following is a public service announcement from the Black Reality Think Tank.
It is customary in African tradition for me to ask the elders to speak. May I speak?
Speak.
My name is Alfonso Watkins. I am a licensed clinical psychotherapist here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I have been asked to share some information pertaining to the catastrophic and pandemic situation that we are experiencing in the Black community throughout the country, as well as on the planet. The times that we are living in is very critical from a mental health perspective and as well as a spiritual perspective to tap into your relationship to your creator or to our creator and understanding that we have had or have been through many of these pandemics and catastrophic situations before. So we have the necessary coping mechanisms and survival skills to do and to survive through this. So it's important that you begin to spend more time meditating, praying, practicing some of our traditional things as it relates to our traditional religions and getting in tune with our ancestral consciousness. So those are some of the things that I would suggest that individuals need to practice and acquire to get through this process. And we are praying that those individuals who have lost loved ones during this difficult time, that the Creator and the ancestors bless you and give you the strength and the wisdom to persevere through this. And so it's important that you practice and listen to some of the many of the necessary things that the professionals, doctors are requiring that you practice to survive through this. So once again, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
And I, boy, and I, a 2 for 2, vote for me and I'll set you free.
Rap on, brother, rap on.
Well, the only person talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher. And it seems nobody.
Mr. Teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to my nation.
Sitting there autographing books, a demented black woman came up. The only question I heard from her was, "Are you Martin Luther King?" And I was looking down writing and I said, "Yes." The next minute I felt something beating on my chest. Before I knew it, I had been stabbed by this demented woman. I was rushed to Harlem Hospital. It was a dark Saturday afternoon. That blade had gone through, and the x-rays revealed that the tip of the blade was on the edge of my aorta, the main artery. And once that's punctured, you're drowned in your own blood. That's the end of you. Came out in the New York Times the next morning that if I had merely sneezed, I would have died. Well, about 4 days later, they allowed me, after the operation, after my chest had been opened and the blade had been taken out, to move around in the wheelchair in the hospital. They allowed me to read some of the mail that came in, and from all over the states and the world, kind letters came in. I read a few, but one of them I will never forget. I had received one from the president and the vice president. I've forgotten what those telegrams said. I'd received a visit and a letter from the governor of New York, but I've forgotten what that letter said. Yes. But there was another letter that came from a little girl, a young girl, who was a student at the White Plains High School. And I looked at that letter and I'll never forget it. It said simply, "Dear Dr. King, I am a ninth grade student at the White Plains High School." She said, "While it should not matter, I would like to mention that I'm a white girl. I read in the paper of your misfortune and of your suffering. And I read that if you had sneezed, you would have died. I'm simply writing you to say that I'm so happy that you didn't sneeze. I want to say tonight that I too am happy that I didn't sneeze, because if I had sneezed, I wouldn't have been around here in 1960 when students all over the South started sitting in at lunch hours. And I knew that as they were sitting in, they were really standing up for the best in the American dream and taking the whole nation back to those great wells of democracy which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. If I had sneezed, if I had sneezed, I wouldn't have been around here in 1962. The Negroes in Albany, Georgia decided to straighten their backs up. And whenever men and women straighten their backs up, they are going somewhere, because a man can't ride your back unless it is bent. If I had sneezed, I wouldn't have been here in 1963. Black people of Birmingham, Alabama, aroused the conscience of this nation, brought into being the Civil Rights Bill. If I had sneezed, I wouldn't have had a chance later that year in August to try to tell America about a dream that I had had. If I had sneezed, I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord."
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is Dr. William Rogers, and I am your host for this afternoon. We welcome you to our premiere edition of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Report. We are so happy that you have been able to join us here in this maiden voyage of our program. It's still a part of the Black Reality Think Tank that airs every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9, but this is also a part of the weekend edition, so we'll be on the air twice a week. So anyway, we are very happy that you are here. We have a wonderful topic that we're going to discuss this afternoon. The topic is to vote or not to vote. Is that a logical question for African Americans in the November 2020 election? And so we are here. I have asked two wonderful individuals who are to produce a part of the most of the Weekend Report programs. And they have decided to develop this idea, and you're going to meet them in just a few minutes. One of the reasons that we wanted to get them to do this, both of the individuals are mental health professionals, and they quite often deal with our children and our families, and they deal with some of the struggles. So as a lot of the programs that we've been talking about on the Black Reality Think Tank, we decided we wanted to have a mental health flavor to them. And so even today, as we talk about voting, we want the to give that mental health rate, because, you know, we often talk about the trauma that African people have to have endured living here in this country. And so this topic is critical, because the history of voting rights in America is 3 centuries old. 3 centuries old is that struggle. And so obviously to ask the question to vote or not to vote, is that a logical question? Most definitely. We can just say that from the beginning. But they're going to talk about some things, and they're going to present some ideas to you that will very clearly speak to some of those kinds of ideas. And as I said, they have a mental health background, and they are going to use that in a lot of the analysis and the ideas that are going to be presented. But as always, as you know, the Black Reality Think Tank always gives tribute to our ancestors. We stand on the shoulders of greatness. We stand on the shoulders of a very powerful people. And so we would like to always give honor to Fannie Lou Hamer, the great Fannie Lou Hamer from rural Mississippi, said we must always praise the bridges that brought us over. And so that's what we want to do now. And so we are going to go to a young lady, she's going to introduce herself first, and then she'll tell us who she is, and then she's going to do our ancestral profile. Good afternoon, young lady.
Good afternoon. My name is Kayla Williams. I'm reading Dorothy Height. Dorothy Height was a key leader during the Civil Rights Movement who advocated for the rights of women in addition to the rights of African Americans. She was the head of the National Council of Negro Women, which enabled her to become a member of the Council of United Civil Rights Leadership. She was the only woman in this group of men. In Height's words, there was an all-consuming focus on race. We women were supposed to put all our energies into it. Clearly, there was a low tolerance level for anyone raising questions about the women's participation per se. In spite of this, Height advocated for the voices of women and young people to be heard. In addition to her unique position as a female leader in the civil rights movement, Height was unusual in her explicit push for women's rights. We should not be ashamed or afraid of advocating for our rights as a woman. While Height's legacy is not adequately captured in many history books, she did have an important impact on the world. Remember that whatever you are doing to further the rights of Black women, whether that be speaking out on social media, marching, or exerting yourself at your job, your efforts are significant, and you too are helping to pave the way for future generations of Black women. Valuing yourself and your work helps to relieve feelings of stress and hopelessness. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wonderful choice. Dorothy Height, wonderful, wonderful choice. She is very powerful, as she said, fighting for women's rights. She followed in the path of the great Mary McLeod Bethune, Mary Church Terrell, and Ida Barnett, Wells Barnett, and all of them were fighting of that period. And so Dorothy Height came into the 20th century having been mentored by a lot of those great women. So thank you so much for that wonderful choice. So now we are ready to begin. I'd like to start off by introducing my two wonderful host producers of the weekend edition of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they have some wonderful things coming up in the future. And again, as I said, I wanted to give that, first of all, that mental health perspective. Second, I wanted to hear the female voice. A lot of times on the Black Reality Think Tank on our Tuesday program, we do have women participating. In fact, we had a very good program this past Tuesday with Ms. Bonisa Ayan from Greensboro, who did a wonderful show. We raised the question, Black people, what y'all going to do? And so she handled that very well, and we had some wonderful guests. And so tonight we're going to talk about voting. And so let me introduce to you Ms. Leola Williams and Ms. LaWanda Chambers, who will both be hosting our program. I'm going to be right here with you behind, backing up your mechanical part, and I'm sure to help you out whenever you need to be helped. But anyway, I want to introduce you to our program. Good afternoon, ladies, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank.
Good afternoon, Dr. Rogers, Dr. Rogers and audience. I'll introduce myself first, and then Ms. Chambers can follow me, if you don't mind.
No problem.
My name is Leola Williams. All right. I'm Leola Williams. I am a substance abuse counselor and mental health counselor. Oftentimes, we get a lot of opportunity to listen to individuals and families dealing with their alcohol and drug abuse issues, along with their mental health, identified mental health issues. We kind of help them with the educational component of what they're struggling with, homelessness, trauma, along with other issues that they may be going through. Because oftentimes what happens, these families and these individuals have been overlooked and underserved. So that's what we bring to the table, and that's why we chose to discuss this particular discussion on voting or not to vote, because there's a lot of confusion that goes along with that. And sometimes mental health or mental indecisiveness comes along with that. So I appreciate the opportunity to be on the Black Reality Think Tank program with my co-partners, LaWanda Chambers.
Thank you for that, Leola. Hello, everyone. My name is LaWanda Chambers, and I am a community psychologist, and I will be your co-host this evening. I also work in the mental health field, assisting children and families and doing some of the same things that you just heard Ms. Williams talk to you guys about. So I'm not going to repeat everything that she just said, but know that I have a plethora of experience working with children and families, trauma, mental health illnesses, mental health, everything. So I'm ready to come on here and give you guys a piece of my mind and what it is that I have to offer to our community. So I'm looking forward to this discussion and hearing what you guys feel about voting.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Chambers. Well, ladies, do we vote or don't we vote?
That is the question. That's the question.
Is that a valid question? So you can start right in with your
question. Yes, it is a valid question.
Okay.
Well, oftentimes people are misled about whether or not to vote or whether or not they're voting for the right person. So that's why we thought this was an important piece to bring to the table to really spark up some conversation about what needs to happen in this upcoming election and the importance and the right to vote.
Okay.
I would think it's a very relevant discussion because a lot of people, they're a little bit indecisive about what they should do, where they should go, how they should do it. Does it make sense to be doing it at all, you know? And if you're not doing it, why aren't you doing it? And what's the plan for not doing it? How do you get what you want if you're not an active party partner in this democracy?
Okay, well, ladies, what I'm going to ask you to do is that you're going to take the helm here and lead the discussion. We do have our audience online, as always. They're waiting. We'll open up the lines for them and whenever you feel that it's time to do so. But I know that each one of you have a commentary about all of this. So you go right ahead, and like I said, I'm here, but you just go right ahead and do what you need to do.
Well, I'll start off with this because one of the things and one of my major concerns are the right to vote and the need to vote. I'm from the old generation, growing up in the South and different things like that, and we didn't have an opportunity to vote. And since we were brought over to a country against our will, we have been placed in a position where we must vote. Our votes are important, and since we live in a democracy, we have an opportunity to vote the way we feel like we need to vote. You know, not all the people that we vote for are going to be in our favor, but the thing it is, we have to do better than what we're doing right now. So we don't want to lose that right to vote. And what I want to bring into the conversation at this time or just give a little history about voting. You know, back in 1965, when President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act, guaranteeing African Americans the right to vote, the bill made it illegal to impose restrictions on federal, state, and local elections that were designed to deny the vote to blacks. Johnson assumed the presidency in 1963 upon the assassination of President Kennedy, John F. Kennedy. In the presidential race of 1964, Johnson was officially elected in a landslide victory and used this mandate to push for legislation that he believed would improve the American way of life, which included stronger voting rights laws. A recent march in Alabama in support of voting rights, during which blacks were beaten by state troops, shamed Congress and the president into passing the law meant to enforce the 15th Amendment of the Constitution ratified by Congress in 1870. In a speech to Congress on March 15, 1965, Johnson had outlined the devious ways in which election officials denied African-American citizens the vote. Blacks attempting to vote were often told by election officials that they gotten the wrong date, time, or polling, wrong place, that the officials were late or absent, that they possessed insufficient literacy skills or had filled out an application incorrectly. Often African Americans whose population suffered a high rate of illiteracy due to centuries of oppression and poverty would be forced to take literacy tests, which they inevitably failed. Johnson also told Congress that voting officials, primarily in southern states, had been known to force black voters to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complicit provisions of state laws, a task most white voters would have been hard-pressed to accomplish. In some cases, even blacks with college degrees were turned away from the polls. Although the Voting Rights Act passed, state and local enforcement of the law was weak, and it was often outright ignored, mainly in the South and in areas where the proportion of blacks in the population was high and their vote threatened the political status quo. Still, the Voting Rights Act gave African-American voters the legal means to challenge voting restrictions and vastly improved voter turnout. In Mississippi alone, voter turnout among blacks increased from 6% in 1964 to 59% in 1969. In 1970, President Richard Nixon extended the provisions of the Voting Rights Act and lowered the eligible voting age for all voters to age 18. And that's our challenge. That says it right there. We have the right to vote. But even today, in our recent election on April 7th in the state of Wisconsin, we still had to fight and struggle to cast a vote, jeopardizing our safety and our health, only to go to a poll to be denied in some instances, and some people got there and weren't able to vote. We are still being oppressed and challenged by our rights to vote and by our rights to be an American, since they brought us here against our will anyway. So that is what the question is. Do we vote or not vote? Is it relevant to the changes that we need to have in our lives today?
Beautiful. So, thank you. Ms. Chambers?
That's why I'm here. And I would have to say I agree 100% with Ms. Williams. You know, it is very important that we vote. It is important that we vote. Our ancestors have fought for this. It seems to me that some of the same repetitive cycles are continuing to manifest. And we are very much fighting in the civil rights movement today. However, it is not the same fight. We have to do things differently. And that starts with voting. Historically, we have been disenfranchised by way of systemic racism. This includes the laws and government, which affects all of the choices we make on a daily basis. Some of these things are work, schools, healthcare system, taxes, law enforcement, and many other aspects of our lives that we have seemingly lost control of. When I hear people say that they don't have to vote, it says to me the person has some sort of Lord self-esteem on some level. It's content with being a sheep or ignorant to what their position is politically. I understand that this can be a heavy and intimidating topic, but I am not talking about the topic due to lack of passion. I'm saying I'm asking folks to do right. Look at where we are as a people. Stop and look around. Is everything about money to the point that you're willing to die for it? Let's be responsible and find some grace. Where's grace right now? Where's the gratitude, the good old-fashioned goodwill? Where's the common sense? How in the hell is being silent going to help? What are we doing? Taking on a defense of stonewalling? This is not a good form of communication. Being proactive instead of reactive will take us a very long way. Where is that by any means necessary attitude? Where is that get up and do attitude? I would like to understand the strategy behind this stonewalling and the expectation of how we as people can move forward by not doing anything. People, what does this mean? This means understanding politics, voting locally, understanding your issues, lobbying, gaining a following, being consistent to start with. This is imperative, people. This is very necessary to understand what we need to do and where we need to go. I'm looking for an action plan, a plan of implementation. Looking back between 1865 and 1871, Republicans in Congress passed initiatives to protect the voting rights of African-American men, just freed from slavery. These people were living during a time where they understood the many injustices they were experiencing, to which they had to not be conditioned to survive against all means. Do you understand the trauma that these people were experiencing and how much religion and having a way out was key to their existence? Objectively, we are disrespecting our ancestors by silencing our voices and saying there is no reason to vote at all. I'm asking people to do right and not allow the blood, sweat, and tears of our ancestors to be in vain. Looking back on the struggles and the things I've experienced during my upbringing has led me to believe not only do we need to vote, but we also need to put ourselves in the position to create changes politically. We should be teaching our children about math, science, technology, politics, and the economy. We live in a democracy, which means the system of government by the whole population or all the eligible members of a state, typically through elected representatives. Hello, we have to vote. Let's be literal. This definition alone says that we matter, and I'm here to say black people. If only we could unite and work together, we would truly be addressing the first step to reunification of us as a people. We got to do better.
All right. That historical analysis that both of you offered was extremely powerful. And then I'm sure you're going to get a little further into some of that, but maybe if I have an opportunity, I want to kind of ask you, the discrimination, obviously, that African Americans have endured in this whole voting rights process, as I said, is long. It's long, as Ms. Chambers said, systematic. But also, within that long, systematic discrimination of African Americans, they've also discriminated against women. Would either one of you like to address that form of discrimination? Because when the 15th Amendment was passed, it explicitly said only men. So what do you gather from that idea? And either one can take that and look at it. What do you think about the discrimination against women?
You have that, LaWanda, or you want me to take it? Well, it goes back the what my daughter just read about Dorothy Height. Right. Women has been they've been working since slavery, trying to be a part of the changes in bringing forth fruits as far as being able to vote and having the right to vote. So we've been in the background the entire time. So I think when we learn more and get more into the trenches of things and learning how powerful we are as women, because Black women have opened the door to many opportunities and took the lead into some of these struggles that we've been dealing with back in the days and all the way up until now. Because as women, we still are challenged by our strength. First of all, they don't respect strong Black women. So we have done a lot and paved a lot of ways, you know, in the movement of civil rights and voting rights for African American women. But it's still a uphill battle as we go. We're still being challenged by who we are.
Okay.
So that's what I think at this point.
That's good. Ms. Chambers, anything you want to add to that? Okay. Ms. Chambers?
Okay. Nope. I'm here. I just realized my thing was on mute. That's why you can't hear me. No problem. I would have to agree with Ms. Leola. I mean, honestly, the women, we have always been there. We're a big part of the household. We're a big part of the discussion. And the whole time while the men were getting their rights to vote, we were marching right beside them. And so what I say to that is, to this day, women, we continue to take the burden of all of this discrimination. It's very much still happening today in the work field. You know, women are still not getting treated fairly in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. let me ask this, and this is probably a whole program within itself, but why do you think men feel that women can't vote or wouldn't be able to vote? And like I said, this is white women too. They did not want white women to vote. What is it about the male mind that makes it feel that a woman would not be capable of doing that? And I know you'd have to kind of go back and look at the history of it, but I mean, just on the surface of it today, what is it about that mentality that you find among some brothers, not every brother's like that, but some brothers, and that women are not capable to do such things as voting or hold public office or vice versa, some of those kind of things? What do you think that is? What is that?
I think it's socialization. I mean, even looking back then, it's a shame that it took 50 years later, after African American men were granted the opportunity to vote, that women were granted that same opportunity. You know, it's been socialized. We've been socialized that way to think that this is a woman's place, you know, in the house, cooking and cleaning. And so that's all you should know about. You should know nothing about no economics or no politics or no science or the money or this or that. And so I'm here to say it's a new day. Women are very independent, okay, very capable, very smart, very strong, and can do just as much as a man. What Sojourner Truth said, I can eat just as much as a man. I could put away just as much. I've carried these 13 children by myself. You know, we look at our ancestors. Us Black women were strong. We're strong.
Yes.
A lot of trauma there. Lots of trauma there. I mean, kids being snatched away from women.
Yes. Very good. Yeah, excellent. So that old adage about keep them barefoot and pregnant, that doesn't work anymore, does it?
Well, it ain't going to get you too far.
Right. Ms. Williams?
I just wanted to piggyback off what LaWanda was saying, because we were raised, especially in the South, to just breed. During the slavery time, Black women were supposed to be breeders so the children can go out and man the fields. Mm-hmm. So we were not given the opportunity to speak our minds or to show our own intellect to the man, especially the white man that owned the plantation and different things. Our job was to be humble, raise their children, garden iron and different things like that. So as time went on, we became more independent thinkers because we were already doers. We just needed the mindset and the opportunity to do what we knew we could do and what we continue to do today. We are a powerful people. We are powerful and strong women. And therefore, there's a fear there amongst the white men and some of our men, the African-American men, who do not believe in themselves, in which white society kind of damaged that on their part as well. Mm-hmm. So, but we are strong. We are strong people. We are strong women. And we have raised our children along with their children as well.
Their children, too. Hello. 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 Exactly. 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 Couldn't have said it no better. That is the honest truth. And then to even go a step further, I'm liking where this is going. To even go a step further, you know, our black men have been then socialized by their white masters. Before this slavery thing even came into existence, we were kings and queens. And I do mean queens. Therefore, women were ruling and in control of things. It wasn't until we got over here that that was something that was unheard of and shouldn't have been done and try to break us down. You know, and that's the breakdown of us as a people. They take everything we know, everything we honored, and then they changed it and they shackled our minds. We didn't even know who we are no more as a folk. We didn't even know who we are no more as a people. It's the issue. That's why we're having issues right now with this voting discussion, because of the way we've been socialized to think.
Okay. Thank you. Very good response to that. And I think you would have not too many people online here would disagree with you in terms of that approach. You're exactly right. But it's a discussion, because it was a very long history of discriminating. As you know, it wasn't until the 19th Amendment came along that women were given the right to vote. And that took a fight. That was not just happened. It took a real fight, as you said. And so the Murray McLeod Bethunes, the Sojourner Truths, and all of them had to wage that war and to do that. So I really thank you so much for responding. Okay, let me. I wanted to ask you to get back to this whole thing about the voting and what it means. You know, one of the arguments that you hear sometimes from folk about voting, when they say, "Well, what difference do it make? It don't make no difference to vote. We ain't going to win no way. And then if we do win, they're not going to still respond to anything that we do, because we are a minority. We 23% of the population. So, you know, they're not going to adhere to things black folks. So what's the use? I don't need to vote." How would you respond to that remark? Both of you can take a shot at that.
Well, you know, listening to last week's podcast, and some of the people were talking about or gave reasons as to why some people shouldn't vote. And some of the things that I just happened to write down was a message for real men. Real men don't vote. Voting ain't black enough. Holier than thou. That means voting ignores the divine. Voting ignores racism. Voting doesn't pay you. You know, just a bunch of things that they feel, or that the right candidate is not running. And the thing it is with that, for me, we're never going to get a perfect person to run for anything or to represent us as African Americans. So no one that you choose is going to be perfect and fit what we need them to fit in order to take care of our people, our children, our generations, and different things. They're never going to reward us for the struggles that our ancestors had to go through in order to get us to where we are today. So that is not going to jive. But we need to get someone in there, at least with some passion, with some kind of conviction, and knowing who we are and what they're up against. Someone who's willing to listen to some of the things that we continue to struggle with
just to have an easy life these days. Just simple things. You know, education. We have a right to education. You know, we have a right to medical. We have a right to be heard. We have a right to inherit some of the things that our ancestors helped build after being brought here against our will. So we have a right. It's not that we're entitled. No, we have a right to all of that because we and our ancestors made this possible. So it's important to vote. Though they may not be perfect, but you got to vote for somebody who at least has a soul and doesn't ignore human's life.
Okay. How would you respond to that, Ms. Chambers?
I'm going to respond to that, and then, but when I get done responding, my question would be, why shouldn't you vote? You know, why shouldn't you vote? But I'm going to share with you guys why you should.
I knew they were going to get over there. Run their damn mouth.
I'm sorry, that's it. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. Oh, very good. Very good. So the reason why you should vote is because that's your voice, you know, and if you don't want to have a voice, that's fine too. But be okay with the consequences that follow with that, i.e. COVID, what we're dealing with right now. So if you was one of those folks who said you shouldn't vote, thank you. Thank you for COVID, you know. And if you one of those persons who did vote, I appreciate you. Same time, if you voted for Trump, that didn't make much sense. Let's be logical when we're making these decisions. Let's really look at not just the bottom line, but how these things really going to affect the issues that matter the most to our people. So voting gives you an opportunity to say this I don't like over here, this I do like over here. And then you look at these candidates and you say, okay, this person over here, they got some things going on that's going to work for me. But this person over here don't. You got to be able to be vigilant, understanding what is your opportunity. You know, what is your opportunity here? So voting is important because it gives you that opportunity, one that our people fought to have. They fought for us to have an opportunity. Therefore, I'm not going to disrespect my ancestor by not going to the ballot. I remember holding my auntie's hand as a little girl. My auntie was born during the Great Depression, taking me over there to the ballot, letting me know how she had to do all these voting tests Ms. Williams just talked to us about a little bit earlier. See, when you find out that history, and that history is deep and close to you, you feel it. You see the pain in that person's eyes. You understand that fight, and you want to honor their fight. You want to honor that because every day they're trying to take rights away from us. Mm-hmm. Look around you. That's what I got to say about why we should vote. But I want to know from these viewers, for the ones who think that we shouldn't vote, I want to know more about that and hear what their reason for being silent. How is that going to take action for our people? Mm-hmm.
Okay, I hope maybe when we open up our lines that there might be somebody who does have take that position, and then they can share that with us. For our listening audience, you're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. We are dealing with our host producers today, Ms. Leola Williams, Ms. LaWanda Chambers. We are talking about to vote or not to vote. Is that a logical question for African Americans in November 2020? We thank all of you who are on. We're going to open up our lines in just a few minutes to our listening audience. But we are trying to get to the core of this issue of about voting. And so, therefore, we've been given a wonderful commentary by our two producers, and we're going to carry this conversation on just a little bit further. Before we take that break and go to the top of the hour, I want to ask both of you, do you think maybe the problem might be this issue over political parties? That has been stressed too as a challenge to our voting. You know, it seems that, you know, we've had a long, African Americans have had a long history of that. We were at one point when the we were the participants of the Party of Lincoln, which was the Republican Party, which started in Wisconsin, Ripon, Wisconsin, and we then from as we got out of the civil rights into the civil rights area, we switched over to the Democratic Party. And then we go through that because, like, very clearly in the situation with Donald Trump had running for president, he obviously represented the Republican. Hillary Clinton was representing Democrats, and both groups were the lessers of the evil kind of situation. We often are faced with that in our voting. How would you all respond to the political party issue? And, you know, we've addressed that as an African-American community. We attempted once to have an independent black political party. There was a convention in Gary, Indiana in the 1980s to sort of break away from that Democratic-Republican thing and try to start our own party. But anyway, how do you all see that Republican-Democrat issue? And maybe that is one of the blockages to, you know, effective voting possibilities. You want to address that for us?
Ms. Well, uh-huh. me myself personally, when it came down to me figuring out what party I'm going to be a part of, I went ahead and did my research. And so I think it's imperative that people research and figure out how they fit into these parties. And then if you don't fit into one of those parties, then you go ahead and you become an independent. And to your point, Dr. Rogers, I think it would be nice if we did have a black independent party, but with that comes organization mm-hmm. and that we right. need, I think we fall a little short in that organization department, you know, and following through with action plans. And that's why I always say to our viewers, when we have these discussions, it's imperative that we have an action plan. We have some strategies and some things we can do between this week and the next week when we see each other so we can better each other. So educate yourself on your party.
I like that.
I'm personally a Democrat. I have no problem with saying where I stand. But that's my position.
Nope.
Ms. Williams, you care to chime in?
Ms. Williams, any thoughts on the issue of party alliance?
Well, for me, I've always voted Democratic ever since I've known. My parents, my mom has always been a Democratic voter, so I kind of followed that pattern. But as I got older, I began to look at some of the things they offered from each party, even though I don't agree with too much of either party. But I know I have to settle for one. So I go with the one for sense. And since we are a spiritual being, I am anyway. I vote my conscience and I vote the person that I think, not knowing that they're going to really do us a favor. But I look at the structure of what they bring to the table. And I realize as I was growing up and began to vote that their hands are tied too. They can only do a certain amount of things that Congress or whoever have the House or the Congress, they can only do a limited amount of things for you. But I say this to say this. We know we have been a struggling people all our lives. We know this. So when you learn the different parties and what they bring to the table and how they're going to represent you, you have to literally ask yourself, are they really representing me, or what can I get out of the situation no matter who's chosen for president? We have to learn that we bring power to what we need to do and the choices and decisions that we need to make regarding our life and where we stand in our own history. Because in our history, we've always had to work and hustle for what we needed to stand firm on the ground that we live on or that we represent. So no matter who's in president, who's in office at this point, somebody got to be better than Trump right now because he's a soulless man. He doesn't care about anything but money. And when money becomes the root of your existence, there's a problem. Okay. And we need to change that.
Yep, and I definitely agree with that. Doing your research is very critical as you look at making choices. I think you're right about that. We depend too much on CNN and C-SPAN and NBC and ABC, CBS, Fox. You know, those are, they can't. Most of the time, they pick the elected officials. They're the ones that do that. They have created a system now, and that's another two. That's another whole discussion. We only have a 2-hour window here, so we can only deal with that. But I wanted to just bring that up. Mainly, we are looking at you know, this whole thing about African Americans need to get out and vote and talk about that and move that particular agenda forward, agenda item. Before we take our break, we're going to go to the top of the hour and take a break. But before I do that, one other question I want to ask you, and then we come back and we want to open it up to the audience. What about our youth? You know, obviously, the school system is not teaching our children that, and they're not talking about the voting and the necessity of that. I mean, if you do, they might talk about some of the civil rights stuff that, you know, you hear from often. But it takes more than that. To, you know, in terms of the educational process of our school. I remember coming up in the South, in the years of segregation, we used to hold elections, and they would teach us about the idea of voting and elections, and you have to campaign for the position that you wanted to run for, and some of those. So it was kind of like a hands-on teaching process. And as Ms. Chambers said, you know, going to the polls, our parents used to take us to the polls with them. And show us what they were doing, and telling us how to do that. I remember, this is where I tell you how old I am. The first person that I remembered clearly about running for president was when Dwight Eisenhower was running, and I remember that discussion about a lot of stuff that was coming up about his opponent and Adlai Stevenson and all of that. I remember those years. And then obviously the first vote that I made was John Kennedy when he ran for president. That was the first election that I participated in. But anyway, I just wanted to bring this. What do you think about how do we train our youth? How do we train our young people? What has to happen? Who's the responsibility of that? And to get them to understanding the necessity of the things that you're talking about right now. Who has that responsibility?
Well, as we already can see, the school certainly falls short on taking lead on that. And Ms. Williams, I believe she was just about to chime in and said it's all our responsibility. And I would completely agree with that.
Okay. Williams, any thought, Ms. Williams?
Well, the thing it is for me, it has to start at home because our teachers are limited as the quality time dealing with our children because they're spending too much time redirecting them and harping on their behavior. So it's difficult giving instruction time and teaching them something other than the just the basic part of their education or academics, and they're having a, you know, difficult time helping them reach a certain goal. So I think it needs to work in all areas. This should be a time where we spend more time teaching instead of, you know, doing some going about our way like it doesn't matter. But we need to spend more time teaching and educating some parents as well because their hands are tied. Oftentimes because they have to work and they have to do different things outside of the home in order to make ends meet. So I think all of us need to devote some time to the young children who are growing up in this era and in this time about voting, their rights, their safety as a young black man and young girl. We need to teach them the do's and don'ts and practice safety.
Okay.
So all of that need to be incorporated in everyday life.
Okay. All right, let's take a break, a station break, and then we're going to come right back and open up to our audience that's online now. So
the following is a public service announcement from the Black Reality Think Tank.
My name is Leola Williams. I am the owner of an outpatient mental health and substance abuse facility. I am a clinical substance abuse and mental health counselor. I appreciate the Black Reality Think Tank for inviting me on their program to share with you some of the things to help reduce your fear and stress during this pandemic. I know we are all experiencing fear and uncertainty at this time, not knowing who or what to trust, coming from the media or the White House, which makes it difficult to remain calm. One thing that I would strongly suggest is to reduce the amount of time you spend watching the news. Try to increase your communication with family and friends. Listen to your favorite music. Perhaps start an in-home garden with your children. Have them to plant their favorite vegetable garden. Play a word game with family and friends, using the first letter of their name to create a word to describe themselves. Exercise together, make it challenging. Dance, show off your old routines. Share some of the rules from the old days that your grandparents implemented. Watch a movie together. Have a nice fun day together. Learn to breathe, relax, and take one day at a time and pray daily. These are just a few tips on how to reduce your stress.
Maybe the hardest part is you, if you teach, you have to live your teaching. You can't say, you do not as I do, but do as I say. No, no. You have to say, I'm doing my best to live what I teach. I have a painting by Phoebe of a group that she calls Sister Suki's Funeral. And they all the women, there are about nine women, and they all look like women in my grandmother's prayer meeting group. So whenever I'm obliged to do something, I take that painting, and I look at that painting. There's an empty chair, and I think, now what would Grandma do? What would she say? I can almost hear her voice say, now, sister, you know what's right. Just do right. You don't really have to ask anybody. The truth is, right may not be expedient. It may not be profitable, but it will satisfy your soul. It brings you the kind of protection that bodyguards can't give you. Try to be all you can be, to be the best human being you can be. Try to be that in your church, in your temple. Try to be that in your classroom. Do it because it is right to do. You see, people will know you, and they will add their prayers to your life. They'll wish you well. I think if your name is mentioned and people say, oh, hell, oh, damn, I think you're doing something wrong. But if your name is mentioned and people say, oh, she's so sweet, he's so nice, oh, I love, oh, God bless her, there you are. So try to live your life in a way that you will not regret years of useless virtue and inertia and timidity. Take up the battle. Take it up. It's yours. This is your life. This is your world. I'll be leaving it long before you, under the ordinary set of circumstances. You make your own choices. You can decide life isn't worth living. And that would be the worst thing you can do. How do you know? So far. Try it. See. So pick it up. Pick up the battle and make it a better world. Just where you are. Yes. And it can be better, and it must be better, but it is up to us.
You- You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All right, we are back. I wanted to remind our listening audience that this is the Black Reality Think Tank, and we are here also on Tuesday evenings from 7 Central Time to 9 Central Time, right here at the timeforanawakening.com network. Timeforanawakening.com network is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. And we have an archive section, and you can always go to our archive and listen to the program that is currently being broadcast, and also any of our other programs that we have. You simply go to www.timeforanawakening.com and go to the Black Reality Think Tank search portal, and you will be able to listen to any of our programs that we have broadcast. So today's program will be broadcasting probably within about 48 to 72 hours. We will be posting that site, and we definitely encourage you to do that. We thank all of you so much for your patronage here this evening. This is our maiden voyage of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition, and we have two wonderful producers that are going to be working with us on this weekend, Ms. Leola Williams and Ms. LaWanda Chambers. And so they have... and let me add, I really appreciate it. They produced today's program. All of our choices of music and words were produced by them. And then on our Tuesday edition, we also have a co-host that does from time to time produce programs, and Ms. Benicia Wayar, we appreciate her. And so we are moving forward, and our broadcast is really developing, and we're trying to reach a wide audience, and with the help of you and others, we've been able to do that. So we thank you so much. Okay, we are going to go to our board and ask, see if our viewers or listeners have any questions. A lot of you may be just listening, and if you are, you don't need to say anything. I am going to open your mics and ask you, do you want to make a comment, or were you just listening? If you're just listening, you don't have to say anything. I'll just proceed on to the next individual. So I'm going to go with... one of the first to join this broadcast today was my good brother out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Brother Timothy. Good afternoon, Brother Timothy. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Doctor. And you have two wonderful guests, and Ms. Chambers and Ms. Williams. I think it's a good time for the African-American woman. I think about Stacey Abrams. I think about the young lady who is the mayor in Georgia. I think about, I go all the way back to, of course, Shirley Chisholm's. You all go back to Phyllis Wheatley, and you go back to Harriet Tubman. I'm saying today now, if you look, I've been looking very much at what's going on in America like you have. We are being attacked by a man who has a disease in his mind. He got a disease that's killing us with a virus. And I'm going to say that if we look at it, I'm not going to be that long, how the Democratic Congress was able to impeach a man who is dangerous to America. We were able to get that Congress through voting. Now, if you look at those pioneers, those fighters who were on the Democratic side, one gentleman whose name was Sid Cruz Jeffries. That's Dr. Leonard Jeffries' nephew. And if you look at the woman who carried the articles of impeachment, her name is Sheryl Johnson. She's a Howard University Law School graduate. Now, those women... And the woman who was from Florida, who was the former chief of, I think she was a sheriff in Florida, those women turned that thing upside down, right side up. So when it comes to voting, I in Philadelphia will vote every election. When I say that, there are some people who I might not like that I want to vote for. There are other things to vote for. You could do write-ins. You could do what one time we had on our ballot, whether or not we wanted charter schools or not, whether you wanted Edison to come back. There's so many things to vote for. But the people who were before me, who taught me about voting, said that it must be like a puzzle fight. The more you vote, the more you understand it. And I'm going to tell you right now the Democrats are winning. Now listen to me, but the Republicans are going to want to cheat to stay in there. So we have to overtake them with voting.
Hello.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
Our I'm defense. Listening. That's our defense.
That's, right.
That's our right. defense. Voting.
That's right.
You looking for an answer, folks? That's the answer. Vote. We need to vote.
That's it. How are we going to get Donald Trump out? You can't pray him out. You can't wish him out. You have to vote him out. I like this program. I like what you did, Dr. Rogers, with these two ladies, Ms. Williams and Ms. Chambers.
Well, thank you, Brother Timothy. I always appreciate you and what you do. Let me go over to area code 336-621. I think I know who this is. Good afternoon, caller.
Good afternoon, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Great. Great.
Good. And greetings to the panel, the sisters. I just got
good
on about...
afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I just got on about 30 minutes ago. I'm trying to figure out how I want to share this because I've observed that the issue of voting, you know, Republican versus Democrat and the issue of religion are the two topics that we get really emotional over, and they touch us deeply. And from my observation is because the both of them can do a lot of good or a lot of bad. So, you know, religion and politics, those who can, you know, can be used to control people in some really good ways or some really bad ways. And so what I want to talk about for a minute is the bad stuff, because I've observed our people to have a pattern of being so blindly committed to something that we don't look at the whole picture. And I don't vote. I don't vote. For me, the system, I used to vote. I used to really, you know, be involved on some level. And as I start to examine this system, the system is sick. And we can't make it well. The system is run by sociopaths. You can't make sociopaths not be sociopaths. So I decided to pull out. If there's a particular election where something, you know, like Brother Timothy talked about certain issues, you know, that would affect my community directly, you know, I might vote. Otherwise, for me, it's become a waste of time. And so here's where I'm coming from in terms of looking at somebody, looking at the whole picture. I'm looking at what kind of power we have as black folk. Most of the time, our politicians can't get anything done. Where I am in North Carolina, I know several politicians, and they cannot get anything done. What they do is get elected, and they fight, and they argue, and they fight, and they can't get anything done. Some will venture out and let us know things like, you know, when the fiscal time rolls around and they're, you know, deciding where the money would go for schools. Some will venture out and let us know that 95% of the money is going to white schools and 5% is going to black schools. And so we fight and we argue, and that does not change. I've also voted. The last time I voted, I went to my local site, and I voted for someone that I knew who's running for Congress, Alma Adams. I voted for her, Democrat, and I voted straight Democrat when I used to vote, and I did so this time. That vote went to the Republican that was running against her. The machine pushed the Democratic vote to a Republican vote. And I almost was not going to double check it. And I said, let me double check this and make sure, you know, this thing is operating correctly. And sure enough, where I voted for a Democrat, it went to the Republican. I talked to the people at the poll who I actually knew, and their response was, yeah, well, we know it's happening, but, you know, we don't know what to do. And so I see this level of corruption that is off the chain with voting machines. They're being engineered. And please, for those who are passionate about voting, learn the other side. There's a man named Jack Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. He's doing investigative reporting about how they are engineering the machines so that whatever conservative issues that are on the ballot, the machines are going to go straight there. or the machines are going to break down, or they're getting rid of the machines in, you know, on college campuses. There's so much going on. The CDC is pretty much powerless to do anything. So I'm looking at this, what are we voting for? Dr. Claude Anderson really breaks down the system. He worked under Jimmy Carter for many years. And there's a whole lot that's wrong. And so as we're telling people vote, vote, vote so passionately, like vote or die, which I don't believe, I think it's kind of ridiculous. And I hope nobody said that, because I'm not calling anybody ridiculous. But there's so much wrong that we can't get anything done. So maybe we ought to spend a little bit more, not maybe, we ought to spend a little more time at looking what's wrong and addressing that. We need to, if we want to vote, find a way to challenge these people and make sure that they stop shutting down the voting polls on college campuses, especially HBCUs.
Yeah, that's right.
So the stuff that they're doing, we're overlooking, and we can, and so in terms of election, they can't get anything done. And one more, the last thing, because I had a lot that I was thinking about, but we need to check ourselves, because black folk, most of us vote Democratic. Joe Biden is a man that's in mental decline. It's obvious. The man forgets. He becomes discombobulated, confused, and incoherent. And we're voting for somebody like that. We have to be crazy to vote for somebody who cannot possibly do the job that he's being put. He couldn't even probably drive his own car. But what is wrong with black people that we're getting behind somebody who is incapable of functioning? In another year, he may decline much worse. More than likely, that's what happens, you know, with mental health, with dementia, whatever he's got. So let's look at the whole picture, y'all, and please don't be so easily bamboozled.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Area code 414-899, are you just listening, or would you like to say something? All right, just listening. Okay, let's go to area code 414-748-1111. Are you listening, or are you like to say something?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, this is Mike Brock calling from Milwaukee.
Oh, good, brother. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Dr. Rogers,
doing
Ms. Williams,
doing
Ms.
Great.
Chambers?
Thank you so much for calling.
Love it. Yeah, you know what? I've been on the phone since 3:05. I done got tired now, but that's okay. Yeah, you held my attention. You're doing a great job. I love it. I'm going to be quick. I'm going to be direct.
Okay.
First of all, you know, I hear some frustrated people. Don't give up. Hope is on the way. Okay. I get it. We're right. We do need to do better, but we got to expect better. That's from our elected officials. Just because, I wouldn't even say frustrated. I'm really disgusted. With the African American leadership, we're gonna get to the white leadership because they doing what we expect them to do. But just because they look like us don't mean they're for us. Now I was, and the whole thing, the complain. I'm just gonna just raise one thing here. I was at Washington High School on April 7th for the primary election. And, in the rain, it was a hailstorm, and it was, CD19 was all over. Our people were out there in numbers. They had, some had masks on, some had, were social distancing, not really. Some of us were riding 4-5 deep in the car, spreading it, and it was us. You know, everybody was out there hollering, you know, at everybody. But my thing is this, when you tell us don't do something, that's when we do it. I was so proud of the people. It was at five high schools. They had reduced the polling places down from 188 to 5. That was a city discussion. Everybody blamed it on, Speaker Voss up in Madison and Fitzgerald, which I got an issue with them, and we're going to handle that. And I'm going to tell you how in a minute. But they were the ones that reduced it. So that was the City Elections Commission. That was on Tom Barrett. And as I went down there, I went down there and I saw our people. And as you know, I'm the founder of Afrofest. I started that, a long time ago. And what it did, when I saw my people down there, it rekindled that spirit. It showed me why I do the things that I do. I just retired from teaching this year, 30 years in the classroom. I won't miss my babies, but got to go on. Time to move on. But So it so inspired me, I decided that, well, complaining is one thing. I decided to run for the state assembly in the 17th district. I filed my papers. I'm in the race. It's going to happen. We need some people up in Madison with some backbone. Okay. Hello. And that's what we need. All this going along to get along, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. First thing I'm going to do, I got one issue. I got a lot of issues, but Vaughn and Fitzgerald were the ones that pressed that to the state Supreme Court, on to the U.S. Supreme Court, over Ray. And I don't know who's advising Tony either. I got an issue with that, too. He waited too long. But anyway, to override it and say, no, y'all not, you don't have 13 days. You're going to vote today. Okay, and then it got lost in the mail and all this other kind of stuff, which is another issue, which is another issue that we have to address. So, having said that, as I said, I was inspired by the folks. I love what you all are doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Keep it up. The first thing is, you know, I do have some friends in Madison, but the thing is, I'm not a part of that old guard piece, because a lot of times that's what's keeping us back, because a lot of our black leaders and elected, appointed, and self-appointed have their own agenda and have had it for years, 20, 30, 40 years. You can't expect it to change. So what we have to do is start grooming young people for leadership and stop trying to take it with us. Okay, and we're not doing that. We're not doing that. You talked about the classroom. Teachers have, you know, they have lesson plans they have to do, and they have pacing guidelines and all that. But there's a lot of flexibility in there to teach those kids the truth. And those kids are ready for the truth. And as far as one other thing, you know, we're talking, you know, the myth of the superwoman. I remember that was a book out. I don't remember who that's by. But for a long time, yes, and we could talk about Willie Lynch and all that kind of stuff, because Dr. Rogers could speak to it much more eloquently than I ever could. But we need to start, the brothers got to step up to the plate, because they're being raised, young men are being raised, they have more fits than a lot of the young girls in my room, my classroom. They got to stop that. Our whole role is to protect. That means we have to be educated, and we have to know how to protect our community. So, you know, like I said, I'm running for the state rep. I'm in it to win it. We got a lot of support. We got a lot of support. And I guarantee you, I'm going to shake some things up, because a lot of the status quo don't want to see me get elected. They don't want to see me up there, because if you're doing something wrong, don't tell me about it, because I'm telling. Right. I'm telling it. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. So there it is. Heaven said that. Ms. Williams and Dr. Rogers, we have unfinished business. as you know, and I haven't forgot about it. What we need is resources and information. I'm going to make sure that I get that to you, because I know how committed that you all are to Fantastic. What you do.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Yes, thank sir. You. Ms. Williams or Ms. Chambers,
would
you
take the next caller?
Ms. Williams or Ms. Chambers, would you all want to respond to any of the comments so far?
Yes, I have a comment. That's what I was. I want to comment regarding the lady that called in about looking at the whole picture and blindly committed to a process. You know, voting is North a process, Carolina. Right? But voting is a process, and it's a right. You know, whatever you do in life, or whomever you don't like, or whatever the process is broken. But to not vote, you lose your opportunity to vote. And your vote really don't count if you don't put anything in. We got power. We showed that. We've demonstrated that we have the power to move some things if we get the right people in order and in there to move them. And then she made reference to the mental decline of Joe Biden. What the thing it is with that, like I said, a man is a man and a vote is a vote. But I would rather vote for anybody, whether it's Snoopy, Woodstock, whomever, with a soul, with some compassion, with a decline maybe mentally. But that's why you choose a vice president in order to help the president of the United States. So if Biden happens to win, then the vice president will help guide him along, so he won't be there by himself, opposed to having a narcissistic idiot with no soul in the White House who don't give a damn about nobody but a dollar sign, and that's it, and that's all. So I would rather vote for somebody who has an opportunity with a possibility to help guide the country back in a positive direction and put it back on the right course to balance us out, because this fool that we have in office right now has caused a unbalance over the whole world.
The whole
now that
world.
Is what we need to change.
Okay.
No matter what has happened in the past, people have died to just cast a vote. And I can understand your level of not trusting or people, you know, not behaving in a way that accounts for every action that they do, but don't throw away the whole vote and waiting for something greater to fall out of the sky.
Right.
Learn to ride with what we have and hope that we get a collective body of people to surround those who we do from the people standpoint to do the right thing by all, instead of having an idiot who's telling someone to go out and inject some damn Lysol in hopes that would get rid of the coronavirus.
I got you.
Come on now. That's ridiculous.
Now, that's what gets my goat. I mean, being unaware. You may know a lot of things that I don't know, but I do know a fool when I see one.
Okay.
Now, we're dealing with a fool.
Go back into office, period.
Ms. Williams, you want to take a shot at that?
We got Donald Trump.
Ms. Williams?
That's it.
I mean, Ms. Chambers, you want to take a shot at that? We got some more folk I want to bring on.
Go ahead and let's hear from our viewers. Let's hear from our viewers.
Okay. All right. Area code 414-499. Are you listening or would you like to say something? Okay. I guess you're just listening. All right. There is a, there's no number here. I just, there's a symbol that says UFS. I don't know what that is, but listener, would you like to say something or are you just listening? Has the initials UFS. Okay, just listening. All right. Brother Pugh, how you doing today?
Pretty good, Dustin. I just want to say that, first of all, just as disappointed as I was the other day with Leola Williams' advice for dealing with the coronavirus, I'm just as appreciative of what she said today about in her defense of Biden. There's nothing that I could have said any better than she did, and so I salute her entirely. In fact, there's nothing wrong with his moral capacity. He doesn't slur his morals, even though he might slur his words. But let me give this observation. One of the things that we've learned is that the way the game is played against black people in this country is as soon as we learn the game, they want to change the rules of the game. Mm-hmm. And so we finally got to a position where we're beginning to manifest ourselves in policy. We're beginning to manifest ourselves in politics. And at precisely that time, people from all over the place are telling us that what we need to do is we need to abandon this tool of politics. And what I've identified is about six strategies that these people, and by the way, these people are largely paid by Trump. They're paid directly or indirectly by, you know, Republicans and whatnot. So they talking all this, whatever they talking, but at the end of the day, these people are anti-black. But there's six messages that I've heard some people utter. The first message is called, this is a message for real black men, that if you are real black men, then you won't be voting, right? And so that's nonsense. The second message that they give you is it's called a blacker than thou message. That if you real black, you won't be voting. Because that's just for, you know, sell-out integrationist Martin Luther King type niggas. The third message is Christian nonsense of the holier-than-thou. That, you know, this God is going to look out for me and I'm divine and I don't need to be worried about you nothing,
that man is doing. I just need to be on the right side with God. I'm blood-bought and all that nonsense. The third is called More Woke Than Thou. That is to say, they'll tell you all this about racism and all the lynchings and murders and things that have happened to black people, and basically saying that, voting basically it causes you to co-sign, you know, for that system. The fourth is from these so-called hip-hop player types. They tell you it's about getting paid, and they'll tell you how, hey, man, it's about my paper, and I ain't getting no money from that, you know, that nonsense. And then the final one is people will give you this rambling, incoherent, paranoid BS about. Now, what they'll do is they'll take all these scary terms and throw them all together into like a jambalaya or a gumbo, but there won't be any kind of coherence to them. They'll say coronavirus and say it in a real scary way. They'll say the Chinese. They'll say slavery. They'll say Africa. They'll say poverty. They'll say 5G. They'll say fake news. And then they'll give you the impression that there are all these real, real, real threats coming at us real, real fast, and that the only way voting just ain't action enough, that we need to be fighting or defending, and by voting we're doing neither one of those. That's called bamboozling. That's when you bamboozle a person, you give them the impression that they have to make a decision in 5 seconds, which they actually have 5 minutes to make.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Miss Williams or Miss Chambers, want to respond to any remarks, or you want to just move on? Okay. Area code 414-218. Are you listening, or would you like to say something? Area code 414-218.
That's me, I think. My name is Barbara. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. My name is Barbara. Yes, it's Barbara Richardson. Hi, Leola. And I just wanted to say one thing. I was listening, or I have been listening all along, and the lady that said that she didn't vote, and, I mean, if that's what she decided to do, that's all right. But a lot of times when I have thought about not voting, what got me to go vote was because I thought about it and I said, you know, when I don't vote, it's like I'm losing before I even start whatever I was going to do, you know. And so every time I don't go and vote, I feel like I did vote. I voted to lose, you know. And I feel like if enough of us go and vote, we might not win, but if enough of us vote, maybe we can stand and ask questions like, why are the machines like they are? Because I believe, too, at times that black votes are not counted and all this stuff. I believe that. But I believe I also believe if enough of us vote and maybe someone get in there, we can ask those questions about the machines or why are they rigged? Because we feel they're rigged and whatever. And as far as who's running between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, I don't even think I need to even really comment on that. But, you know, when I look at that, when it comes down and the two people like them running, I always look at it and say, well, I'm going to vote for the one that's not as bad, because nothing can be as bad as Trump. I don't feel nothing can be as bad as him. This is the worst that I've ever known us to have a president. I mean, some of the things that he say and do. But anyway, I just want to say that I'm going to vote because I don't want to lose.
All right. Thank you so much. Yes, indeed. And that was the question I wanted to pass on to Ms. Chambers and Ms. Williams. Maybe you can, with those of you in our audience who feel the way that our listener just spoke of, and also the young lady that spoke, Ms. O'Yan, who spoke earlier, you know, and I understand her. I feel her. She said she's tired of having to choose between the lesser of the evils. They're both evil. They're not going to do anything really so much. And so what would you recommend to our voters, to potential voters, to African-Americans who might feel that way? What would you recommend would be a process to get through that so that they can then move forward and do what you've suggested, which is vote, without feeling that they have thrown away a vote? How do you rationalize that out? Is there a way that, you know, because again, like I said, you know, as you said earlier, this is a mental health issue. You know, the mind is being confused, as the as the opening song, you know, Ball of Confusion. So how does one make this step and cast that vote regardless, you know, of these odds? How would you suggest that they consider that? And either one go with.
Well, for me, this is Ms. Chambers. For me, it's just not giving up. You know, I empathize with the lady who had that experience in North Carolina with the voting booth. I mean, that's an opportunity to become a whistleblower. That's an opportunity to blow them up and pull out your phones and record and show how these injustices are continuing to happen. These forms of disenfranchisement, we need to show those things. We don't fall silent when we experience this stuff. It's like experiencing a microaggression. You're going to let somebody approach you like that, and you're going to ignore it, or you're going to say something so that this person can learn that this, you know, this is a teachable moment. This is a teachable moment. Let me correct you in that behavior. Let me stand up and say something about what is going on around me. You know, that's one point to look at.
And the other thing one must look at as well, if you go down the history and look at all the presidents before this one, and you can begin to look at some of the things that did happen versus what didn't happen. And if you go down in history, there is not one president that divided an entire nation, not one. This guy has caused such a divide within the United States amongst our people, amongst ourselves. We don't know which way to turn. You know, well, some of his people, anytime you got somebody that found you guilty, had the evidence to prove that you were guilty, and yet turned their back. No, he's riding with them. And those people who did that, they were riding with him. Right, wrong, or indifferent, the majority of white people stand by each other no matter what they do. We don't stand up and pull together as one.
Exactly.
Yet we'll divide ourselves amongst each other and give them the benefit. Whether you like the person or not, one has to outweigh the other. And maybe Joe Biden is not the best pick. But again, let your vote count for nothing opposed to throwing it away on nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. Because we're not just voting for ourselves. We're voting for our whole entire community. You know, everybody. These votes don't just count for you. This vote counts for your mother, your grandmother, your auntie, your cousin who can't get a job, your cousin over there who might not have a sound mind, might have some mental health challenges. We're fighting for these folks' social security. We're fighting for these people to have their health care. We're fighting for some real issues. So if I'm sitting down at home, I'm praying that I don't have to use these services one day. You know what I mean? You got to really think about others when you're going to make these votes too. It ain't just about you, people. It's not just about you. Our ancestors, our forefathers, they went ahead and they voted. They worked together as a community and they voted. That's how their slavery got out of there. You know, common sense.
That's
we can
crazy.
Make change. We can make some change if you stand up for the change. Or you gonna lay down and continue to be trampled over. It's your choice.
Right. Okay, also, I just wanted to add, and maybe you all might want to comment on this. In a lot of cases, I know a lot of focus and discussion has been about Joe Biden and Donald Trump, but one of the worst enemies, you know, in the political arena is the Congress, the demonic spirit that operates out of the U.S. Congress, which really the president doesn't have that kind of control, is something that I think we also need to think about in terms of voting. Is getting some of those congressional leaders in, because you have to remember this whole thing about voting in 2013, the Supreme Court, for instance, did a horrible thing. They had a case called Shelby versus Holder, and they gutted that Voting Rights Act of 1965 that Ms. Williams talked about in terms of Lyndon Johnson. And that decision is still plaguing us right now in terms of a lot of the restrictions, because they have not lessened that act up. So they actually, in essence, killed the Voting Rights Act there. So there is no Voting Rights Act anymore. And so they have been doing some of the horrendous things that you see being done now in terms of voting and politics in throughout the nation. And it's continuing. And so states now are having to try to fight against gerrymandering, those kinds of issues. So we got to think about that, too. Those presidents, the one thing that they do, they can choose the Supreme Court. And obviously, if you have a Republican, they're going to choose a conservative. And right now, the court has been controlled for a long, long time by the conservative branch. That's an area that I think very clearly that voters need to think about as well. They need to think about that the problem with of a lot of that. We've got about 15 minutes, ladies, left in our program, and I wanted to just kind of see if I can get you to speak to again some of the things about local elections, because now that's really where you see some impact. And as Brother Brock talked about, in that local area, that's where you really get some of the changes that need to happen. And the state legislatures and aldermen in the city, those are very critical positions as well. So when you don't vote, and those areas pick in, what about that? You want to speak to those local elections and the significance of those?
Local elections are very imperative. They're just as important as this upcoming election. Just like the discussion before me, those aldermen, the people who are going to be in charge of the public school system, you're voting for all those people right then and there. They take on a lot of issues for us locally. That's very important that you vote in those elections. It's very important that you vote in the primaries. It's very important that you understand what questions you should be asking of your elected officials. You should also know how to hold them accountable. Do you know what that means to hold them accountable? Okay. Do you know how to contact your elected officials?
Good question.
Those are the questions we have to start asking.
Right. So when we look at the Electoral College, because one of the big arguments is Hillary won the popular vote by the people. The people say she should have been the president of the United States. However, the Electoral College are the ones who chose the president of the United States. And whether people know it or not, I'm sure they do, there's 538 electoral college person. It takes 270 votes to win the president of the United States. So it says, who are the members of that electoral college? State elected officials. So we must start with our state in order to elect someone whom we think is going to be looking out for our best interest. So people in the state who have a personal or political affiliation with their party presidential candidate, those are the ones that we have to look at. So in order to educate ourselves along with other people who are of age to vote and those who are coming to the age to vote, we need to help them to understand that it starts from the ground and then work our way up. So from the state or from the community, from the church to the community to the school, to the state or to wherever, the county, everybody. So we have to start from the ground and then work our way up.
I like that.
In order to learn the process in which voting takes place.
All right, let me ask you a grassroots question. Let me ask both you and Ms. Chambers a grassroots question, one that's relevant and right to the point. How in the world did we allow the Election Commission to close all of the polls in Wisconsin except five. How did they get away with that? What is it that we did not do from your perspective that we should have done? That's the kind of behavior that would create a riot almost in some other places. How did they get away with that? What happened?
Lack of involvement.
Say it again?
Lack of involvement.
Involvement by who?
By us, by our people. We're not sitting at the table on a lot of these discussions. And the ones that are in the rooms, they're not concerned about us. They're concerned about their ulterior motives.
So what should we have done?
They're concerned about checking off a box, not about what the issues are. So I would say by having people who are in it for the right things sitting at some of those meetings, going to those town hall meetings. We were not in the room. I take ownership of that too. I hold myself accountable. I was not in the room. I have to step up and get more involved in these things, because sitting back just talking about it, that's going to start the discussion and get some folks, you know, involved. But we got to actually show up to the place. We got to actually knock on the door. We got to stand up and speak, not just listen all the time. We have to say something in those meetings.
And I grant you that.
Well, personally, for me, from my perspective, this is just me. This is coming from, I think the Democrats, whether they're here in Milwaukee or elsewhere, I think they have become weak and they feel they're powerless. And there's a certain amount of fear that is within their soul to cause them not to get out and do what they need to do. We should have had every official at City Hall, in Madison, and wherever else, jumping on top there, the mayor and everybody else. We should have been complaining, making phone calls, and doing what we need to do. But we didn't. We sat back, and then Governor Evers just took what they said and just turned his tail, and which we had to risk our lives to go out there to vote. And then not even complaining about the mail or people receiving their ballots in order to mail it back in. So I don't think it just falls on the little people or the people in the community. It falls on those that we elected in office.
What they did in Milwaukee in this past election is equivalent, if not worse, than what they did in Mississippi and Alabama to block those voters from being able to vote. I don't see much of a difference in the two. And those cases, those people got down and faced the Jim Clocks, and they faced that force that would have hurt them. And Jim Clock wasn't an electoral official. You know, he was sent as a blocker. And so what I think I'm seeing is some level of fear. And again, you are the mental health professionals. I'm seeing there's a fear among our people about responding to arbitrary power. You know, like Frederick Douglass said, you know, power concedes nothing without demand. And we're allowing that to happen. You know, so I think somehow or the other you got to speak to that. And began to think about it. There's an old cliche that was done by the Africans of Brazil. They were called the Quilombos. And they had a quote that said, the reason that you are a slave is because you're afraid to die. And I think that has struck home. Holly, we are afraid to die. We don't want to face that arbitrary power that needs to be faced. You know, if they couldn't have voted, shouldn't nobody have voted? You know, but anyway, that's a whole nother discussion. Okay, ladies, you got less than 5 minutes. I want, you know, maybe each one of you take 2 or 3 minutes and summarize, you know, your presentation today. I really appreciate you. You've done a wonderful and marvelous job. I'm looking forward to some of your upcoming shows. So would you start and just get ready to close us out?
That's right. Well, my final thought is that even though we may never have a perfect person to represent us and what we represent as African Americans, you know, we're still in a democracy. It is time for us to step up to the plate and exercise our rights to vote. No one will give us everything that we feel that we deserve, that we really do deserve, but at least we deserve better than what we have. And we can, you know, rise to the occasion and vote, you know, exercise our rights to vote, instead of letting someone remain in office who does not need to be there or belong there because he doesn't represent the people. None of the people that deserve to be represented. That's my final thought.
Ms. Chambers?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just digesting what Ms. Leola said. I want you guys to know I'm not here telling you all what to do, but I am asking you guys to do right. Do right by yourselves and do right by others. Right now, this is a sense of urgency. This upcoming election, this is a sense of urgency. We need to see a change, people, and I'm asking you to stand by me and stand up with me. Okay, let's go down to the ballot. Let's try to do this time, and let's see what happens. If we can all do this time and see what happens. I mean, seriously, because it does not take a rocket scientist to see that Donald Trump is not the man who we need. He's not the person that we need in office.
Okay. Brother Lush, I see you online. You got about a minute, though. Did you want to say anything?
I just wanted to say good evening. I'm tuning in late, but hopefully everyone has a good weekend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, too. Thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it. We have come to the end of our time. Thank you so much. We'll be back again next Saturday at 3 o'clock Central Time, 4 o'clock Eastern. We'll also be here on Tuesday. We are going to have a congressional representative, or someone who was, had worked for a congressman. And we're going to talk about how decisions are made sometimes and what's that process and how it goes for. We're going to have him as long as, and also hopefully we're going to have a public health official who's going to talk about some things. And we're going to try to ask ourselves the question is, why are they opening up these businesses when very clearly this virus has not gone anywhere? So we're going to talk about that and the whole legislation factor behind that. So we'll be doing that on this Tuesday at 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern. And we thank you for supporting Black Reality Think Tank, and you have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Thank you.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go
brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought.
Good job, ladies. Good job, ladies.
Are we done?
Yep, we're there.
Were you? Very good, very good.
Very good. Did a wonderful job. Wonderful. Hold on just a second.
Okey-dokey.
Hold on just a second. Okay, I had to. Actually, we're still going out over the air. Hold on a minute. Okay, so what did you see?
Well, it was okay.
Okay.
What do you think?
Why was it okay and not good?
It was all right because you came at us with them questions.
But you answered them.
Yeah, but
I wasn't expecting it.
but you know what? You know, and that's you know what? I think one of the things that was happening is you all were lagging when you opened up the program. Everybody was waiting. Right, you were waiting to start doing something. I really had thought you were going to just go right on into it, you know, taking over. Because when I said to you, I said, okay, ladies, I'm going to turn this over to you, and you can, you know, do what you want to do. You still were hesitating, and you don't
want right. Yeah, I noticed that because I called her, I texted her and told her we can't leave any space.
Yeah, you kept doing that, and so that's why I took over. I said, well, maybe they're a little nervous, and they don't want to do this, so let me get stuff going, you know. Yeah, you got to get on into it. That's why I did the questions and okay, we'll talk, because I wasn't prepared to talk about all that. I you know, I had some factors that I, you know, would talk about that history of the voting rights struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, that was it. You know, I had a couple of questions I was going to ask you all later on. So yeah, in the future, when the show opens up, and I said, when I turn it over to you and say, okay, ladies, you know, you got it. Then, you know, you all got to run it. You got to keep it going. You know, you got it. You can't lag.
Right. Okay. I got you. Like I said, that was our first time. Yeah, I know.
That's why I backed you up. I backed you up. I said, okay, well, let me get in here.
We told you we was newbies and you better back us up.
But you all did. You answered them very strong.
I told you we were newbies and we needed you for the backup.
I knew that, but you handled it. I mean, you all were handling it. Your commentaries were perfect. I mean, perfect. You know, you didn't have no problem out of Pew. He matter of fact, he agreed with you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he agreed with what you were saying. He did tell me, I had talked to him earlier, and he said that he said his only problem was, you know, your suggestions around the COVID-19, how not to get into stress. He said he disagreed with that. But that's
his opinion. And that's fine.
That's his opinion. Yeah, right. So
I'm like, what the hell?
You can disagree, but then, you know, find your own entertainment.
Right. Exactly. That's what I do. Everybody does that. Yeah. I use that, and I said I use that diversion thing as always to handle stress. When my daughters died, you know, right. Man, I went into a whole nother world that I never
knew. Right.
I wasn't going to sit there and set a stress over that like that, because that was killing me.
Yeah, because my brother just damn near died going in his depression. He ain't even buried his daughter yet. They're supposed to bury her next week, but he almost died.
That'll mess you up, man. I mean, I'm telling you, I literally mess you up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to listen to this. This is the brother from Philadelphia. I'm gonna leave you on a minute. Hey,
okay.
Hey, Brother Timothy.
Let me tell you something, brother. you're a very good coach. You stay out of it. And, like, you let each side have their spend and their say in their positions. And you, that's good. Because, listen, everybody got to take a turn against if you want to be about it. If you're not good, you're not about it.
Right, exactly.
All the people are multiplying left behind. But the people who want to be behind, they're behind.
Right.
But right now, today... Right now, today, we are in a dilemma, man.
Oh, yeah, we real bad. Yeah, we real bad.
And I know people who don't want to vote because listen at them, but guess what? Take a chance at it. After a while, you get better at it. And then you'll find something to vote for. But guess what? Because we're in office and we're getting used to this, they don't want you to have it at all.
Right.
And guess what? America's changing every day. It's becoming more and more people of color. And that's what they're worried about. And And Trump ran on behind, they don't want to see nothing black again. People of color. That's
right.
The whole thing.
Exactly. And see, he's got a wagon full of demons right behind him. That's backing him up. I mean, a bunch of them. That Congress, that damn Mitch McConnell, and that group of fools, they backing him up everything he does.
That.
Yeah.
When it comes to a vote. That's
right.
Why we have to be together, do we have to do.
That's
it. I understand, Sister Benicia, because...
I do too, yeah.
Anything you fight, man, listen to me. The crack has always been like that.
Right.
If it came about, he got mad because Jack Johnson beat Jeffries. They're always going to want a white coat.
Right.
They always going to want no black in there. They're going to always be a stranger.
That's right. How do you think the ladies did?
Oh, they were wonderful, man. Grassroots. I can tell, grassroots, man. Grassroots. That's my style right there. Grassroots, man. And
okay.
I wanted to tell them that I couldn't get back on. I said, you know what? You may have an opportunity now to vote a black vice president in. But I didn't put it all in. And they would want that. They would want that. Because sisters have been working with us. We've had our problems with them. But I would like to see a sister as a vice president. I wouldn't mind one coming, becoming a president. Why not?
Right, right.
It might be far-fetched, but anything's possible, Dr. Rogers.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, listen, man, I always appreciate your support, man. You know I do. Thank you so much.
Let me tell you. Yeah, listen, I would like to see a sister as a vice president.
Yeah.
She might not become president, but that's a start.
Well.
And like somebody said, well, they might pick Klobuchar, or I'll vote for Klobuchar, but I would. And they may say they might. I don't like that woman, Kamala Harris. She was a bad DA, but she might be a good vice president. Hey, man, just vote.
Okay. All right.
Talk to you Tuesday.
Okay, good brother. Take care.
All right. I'm happy I turned in on this. This was my style.
Well, I'm glad you did too. Yeah. We're going
to
be here every Saturday. Every Saturday. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, you got the, yeah, he's always a hard, he's always critical. So he said he liked it. He liked that grassroots. That's good. Now, he listens on the Philadelphia radio part.
Exactly.
Hello? Y'all still
but
there?
That's what we, uh-huh. Yeah, but that's what it's going to take, grassrooting right now, because that's where the people are, in the community.
Okay.
You know, these people need to hear what's going on. They need somebody to give them a message in a way that they can understand it.
Right.
See, a lot of this political stuff is a bunch of jargon, a bunch of big words. You hear the parliament, you hear the party, you hear this, you hear that.
Right.
The black people want to know the basics. What are you going to do for me? And what have you done for me lately? That's what they want to know.
That's right. Well, I tell you one thing. You all handle this very well. I have no complaints. Nothing at all. You well researched your material, LaWanda. I love the way you were you explained that commentary you had, and then Sister Williams, that fire you put behind it. That was good. That's a real good combination of things. I really appreciate that. I really do. So Wednesday, you know, I got to have that sheet by Wednesday, as I told you. And this time we're going to stick to it just in case we got to make some changes. Okay?
All right. Hey, did you get that stimulus check? Or
okay.
do we want to do one that's called the one that Trump did? What do you have to lose?
Okay. Well, we can. Well, look, I'm going to run because I got to go to the bathroom. So we're going to run. But
no problem.
Okay, no. All right.
Leola, me and you will get together tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Rogers. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Take care.